East, temperatures 8 to 11 Celsius. Now, for all, it's going to be an increasingly windy day. The winds come from the south or southwest, but by the end of the afternoon, much of western England and Wales seeing winds around 60 miles an hour. Parts of Northern Ireland and western Scotland into the later evening could see damaging gusts in excess of 80 miles an hour. Diana.
Thank you. Our book of the week is Darling Monster, letters written from Lady Diana Cooper to her son John Julius Norwich, who introduces some of that correspondence for us. The Second World War enters its third year with seemingly only dark days ahead. The letters are read by Patricia Hodge.
Mother dear, I'm writing you from somewhere in France, hoping this finds you well. Sergeant says I'm doing fine, a soldier and a half. Here's a song that we all sing, it'll make you laugh. You're gonna hang out the washing on the Siegfried line.
West House, Bognor. June the 14th, 1941. Darling Monster, it's the first summer day, the first without frost at night. Jones has brought the hammock out, and I will rock in it this afternoon and look at the roses bursting into bloom hurriedly and watch the bees making up for lost time. I have two hives now. Did I tell you of acting as assistant to the bee fancier at Bognor, Colonel Watson, when he came to open and examine my colonies? I had a veil over my face and elastic bands round my wrists, but I forgot my trouser legs like open chimneys. I thought I felt lots of bees crawling up them and attributed the sensation to my imagination, well known for its activity where horror is concerned. I didn't dare complain to the old colonel, so I carried on till I was stung on the thigh. I didn't even mind that, but it made it clear that imagination was not all the trouble. So calmly and slowly, for one must do nothing spasmodic or hurried where bees are concerned, I took off my trousers and stood exposed in ridiculous pants, pink as flesh. Looking, I found the trousers lined with bees. It was a Charlie Chaplin scene. I feel I've told you of this incident before. My memory is my worst failing these days. War bombings have quite confused it. Papa, recovered, has been fighting like a tiger with tooth and claw and fist, trying to reform his impotent Ministry of Information. But how much he will succeed is another matter.
The early summer of 1941 and the two long summers of 1942 and 43 were, my mother used to say, the happiest time of her life. Serving in canteens, doling out gas masks and making camouflage nets was all very well. But she'd now decided that the cultivation of our 4 acres in Sussex, while raising as many farm animals as she could, would be a far more useful contribution to the war effort. She had no knowledge of agriculture or husbandry, but she learned fast, relying on innumerable pamphlets from the Ministry of Agriculture. My father, meanwhile, was still a distinctly reluctant Minister of Information, commuting daily to London. In that summer of 1941, the situation in the Far East was giving increasing cause for alarm. War with Japan now seemed virtually inevitable. My father was nevertheless dispatched to Singapore with ministerial status. His orders were to travel as widely as possible through the whole area, and then to submit a report on the likelihood and probable consequences of a Japanese invasion.
Government House, Singapore. September the 10th, 1941. The long flight is over. We arrived here at 4 p.m. yesterday after our only really horrible day in the Yankee Clipper flying boat. It was boiling hot, squally and leaden-skied, and we flew not at 10,000 feet, which keeps you cucumber cool and clean and kind, but at 100 feet. This means there is no air at all, windows don't open, and the whole beastly crowd of us were like live sardines in a tin on a stove, gasping, lying with no dignity and less shame, in monstrous positions, smelling, speechless, loathsome to each other and to ourselves. I feel like a Lilliputian on a visit to Gulliver. We are living in the gigantic government house until we find a house of our own. I wish I had you by the hand. We'd enjoy it so much together. I really can't get Papa to enthuse. He never looks round. They're all there, the hats like plates the Britishers won't wear, the Malay peoples in skirts, so that until you meet them face to face, it's hard to guess their sex. The streets plastered with advertisements, saying, I suppose, buy camels or my goodness, my Guinness, but being in Chinese characters look ever so glamorous. It's all here. September the 23rd. Pencils don't show in this climate. It's too damp. So I'll try a pen and get spotted with ink like a Dalmatian dog. I'm still loving Singapore. The house is a dream, slightly Hollywood. I carry a jade green parakeet, tame but ill-tempered, on my wrist or shoulder. Its name is Dicky Barong, and it has vermilion cheek and nose. The Chinese cook is first class, but I have to look like a trussed chicken or pretend to be Red Mullet before he understands what we want for dinner. Papa and I flew in a bomber to Batavia, the capital of the Dutch East Indies. It was a two-engined Hudson, and they'd screwed a wicker chair fast to the centre of the fuselage, but I couldn't see out of the window from it, so preferred to crouch on a wooden ledge. We were all trussed up in parachute harness, which robbed me of all feminine dignity. Nothing looked so shameful as straps between the legs in a skirt. Batavia was very ordinary compared with Singapore. Modern town, spacious and sensible, with wide streets and trams, and no Chinese, and many more white people. We drove for 2 hours upwards to see the governor and to spend a night with blankets over us. He is a great swell, corresponding to our Viceroy of India. Now, of course, with Holland occupied by Huns and a homeless Dutch government, he becomes the big noise with the 80 million inhabitants of what the Dutch call India. They call our India British India. A little Javanese, squat with big wooden face, stood behind each chair at dinner, attired handsomely in strange native liveries. They drop on their haunches when giving you anything on a salver, and if you give them an order, they clutch their private parts with both hands and bow from the waist. The governor was a true and good man, without a ray of humour. But the country hates the Germans as much as we do, and will fight to the death if attacked by Japanese or anyone else. The destruction of Rotterdam after the collapse of Holland will keep their sword sharp for a long while. November the 9th, Melbourne, Australia. I'm sitting in a deserted golf club. It's raining. The others are playing golf and walking round. I saw the little tree bears nursing their babies on a swinging branch. There are also grotesque kangaroos hopping around, and emus that make a noise like a tin tom-tom, not with vocal cords, but with some monstrous part of their stomachs. The Antipodes perplex. All is reversed. Sun, moon and stars, seasons, and, of course, the south is cold and the north hot. There was not much to remember about Darwin, except a lovely, large, very green frog inside the loo itself, which meant that Papa and I dared not pull the plug for fear of meeting it out a hideous fate. Luckily, it jumped out in the night, which relieved us in more ways than one. November the 21st, in the sky, as per, Australia to New Zealand. Papa and I have had a triumphal procession through Australia. They were crazy about us both. Don't ask me why. Everybody claimed relationship. People are very isolated, and they suffer from a desire to be part of the old country and therefore work out genealogies to form a link with the living English. The whole continent is inhabited by fewer people than London is. I wonder if one could bear to settle here. I think I could, given a bit of money so one could have a motor and a swimming pool and some ponies, and, of course, a farm. But I don't know. Only those who go there young can adjust themselves. I'll stick, I think, to Europe or America. Unless you come here, and then, I suppose, I'll have to come hobbling behind.
2 weeks after that letter, on the 7th of December 1941, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. Meanwhile, they were advancing steadily southward down the Malay Peninsula, while Singapore suffered daily air raids. Winston Churchill now appointed my father resident minister, with authority to form and chair a war cabinet. But it was an empty gesture. There was, by this time, nothing to be done. And this was confirmed early in 1942 by a personal telegram from Downing Street. "You should, at your convenience, by whatever is the safest and most suitable route, come home." That year, I also returned from America to become a pupil at Eton College. Later in the war, Winston Churchill suggested that my father should go to Algiers. With Algeria French, but Paris still under German occupation, the city had been selected by General de Gaulle as the French capital in exile, and as his headquarters. My father's brief was to establish an effective body with which the Allies could deal. The task wouldn't be easy, but a great reward was promised. As soon as Paris was liberated, he would go there as first post-war British ambassador.
Algiers, January the 4th, 1944. Darling Monster, now we are installed in our house. If you can call it installed, when there is no cooking apparatus, heating arrangements for a bath, telephones, fires, heating of any kind, sofa, decent chairs, towels, or anything else. Outside, we have limitless acres of jade-green jungle, but inside, law. If you were only here, you would tell me not to be got down by such material things. I, who have prided myself on accustoming the body to hardship. The streets are fantastic, but shops all shuttered because there is nothing to buy whatever. I miss you dreadfully. Nothing shall stop me getting back to you for Easter.
A few days later, they flew to Marrakesh, where Winston Churchill was recovering from a small stroke in his favourite hotel, the Mamounia. One of my mother's code names for him was the Colonel.
January the 10th, 1944. Here I am on top of the deep romantic chasm where Alf the Sacred River runs. It's wonderfully hot. The sky is without blemish of cloud. We've just had a terrific lunch al fresco, stuffing, ham and chickabiddy smothered in mayonnaise, fruit and gâteau washed down with shandygaff. It's been a most wonderful entr'acte in the grim, cold misery of Algiers. We flew here in the Colonel's fine plane. 4 hours it took. And I weathered them. An ample champagne collation was served, and 3 charming young gentlemen were thrown in for good measure. The party is a circus. It's lodged in a millionaire's pleasure dome, all marble and orange trees, fountains and tiles, in the richest Mohammedan style. We live in the hotel. We are guests of the United States Army, so a tray with gin, whiskey, 2 sherries, Coca-Colas, and a carafe of fruit juice, plus all the American periodicals, such as Life and Time, are laid out for our delectation. Winston's wife and daughter Sarah were on the airfield to meet us and buzzed us by US car, complete with immense white star on its camouflage side, to the pleasure dome. There was our old baby in his rompers, 10-gallon cowboy hat, and very ragged oriental dressing gown, health, vigour, and excellent spirits. Never have I heard him spin more fantastic stuff, the woof of English and the warp of slang. January the 13th. The day began at 9 with the review, beautifully staged in a little grandstand. The Caliph, the Pasha of Marrakesh, the King of the Atlas, officials, wives, Duff, and me. I cried from start to finish because of the yells and shouts of Vive Churchill, Vive de Gaulle. The French's joy and pride in the token army that passed, their avions buzzing just over our heads, their own few guns, their own flags, and courage. The sun blazed on this inspiring scene. Algiers, June the 2nd, 1944. It is our silver wedding day. If you had not come to me so late in time, you might be 23 years old and fighting outside Rome. Thank you for being late. I wonder if you had any choice, if you chose us and the year. It's possible. I feel sadly happy. 25 years gone is the sad part. I'm crying a bit as I write, but they've been lovely years, with no storms for Papa and me, not one. And I love him as much as ever I did.
Darling Monster was written by Patricia Hodge, was read by Patricia Hodge, with John Julius Norwich. It was a Heavy Entertainment production for BBC Radio 4. Now to take us to the shipping forecast, here's a little of Sailing By.
Thank you.
Another shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday, the 18th of December. There are warnings of gales in all areas except Trafalgar. The general synopsis at 1800. Developing Atlantic low moving rapidly northeastwards. Expected Rockwell 952 by 1800 Wednesday. Low white 1019 losing its identity. The area forecast for the next 24 hours, Viking, North Utsira, southerly, backing southeasterly, later 6 to gale 8, occasionally severe gale 9, fair, then occasional rain, good, becoming moderate or poor. South Utsira, southwesterly 5 or 6, backing southeasterly 6 to gale 8, perhaps severe gale 9 later, rain later, good. 40s, Cromarty 4th, south or southeast 6 to gale 8, occasionally severe gale 9, perhaps storm 10 later. Showers then rain, good, occasionally poor. Tyne Dogger, south 5 to 7, backing southeast 7 to severe gale 9 later, occasional rain, good, occasionally poor. Fisher, German Bight, south 5 to 7, increasing gale 8 later, occasional rain, good, occasionally poor. Humber, Thames, Dover, White, southeast, veering southwest 5 to 7, backing south 7 to severe gale 9 later.